I would like to call the meeting to order, and thank you all very much for coming. I'm Vicki Millage, and I'm the chairperson of LOCAC, the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. And if you want to know more about us, we have on the back table an All About LOCAC sheet. Please take some. Spread them around the neighborhood, but don't litter. So it's really a very special pleasure for me to be able to chair this meeting this evening. It's a joint meeting of the LOCAC and the Community Services District, the CSD, which makes it special. We only get these fifth Thursdays a couple times a year. Two, it's special because we have had the vendor expo, and we're having the presentation on gray water systems. And most special for us, we are presenting the candidates for the LOCAC elections. And they will be speaking for 5 minutes apiece later in the meeting. And we have, I think this is true, Carol will check me, but we have more candidates this year than have in the past?
Yes.
So we're very pleased about that. Since this is a special meeting, for those of you who are used to coming to either LOCAC or CSD meetings, this is being run in a somewhat different way. Neither LOCAC or CSD is doing any business tonight other than our candidate presentations. So the usual business meeting formats are not going to be followed. We aren't going to have issues to have public comment on. There is going to be a question and answer period after the gray water presentation. So I would like to move on to the introduction of our members, and I'm going to start with LOCAC. We'll go around and say your name and your district or whether or not you're appointed.
Fred Delegata, District 3.
Carol Maurer, District 2.
Paul Malakon, District 3. I'm still Paul Malakon, but still District 3.
Alon Perlman, this is the fourth year of being elected to District 1.
Mimi Whitney, District 1.
Keith Swanson, District 4.
And now, our illustrious Community Services District directors.
Thank you. I just wanted to say a few introductory words. As Vicki already said, this is our joint meeting. And normally at a joint meeting that's a LOCAC meeting, it's not televised, but the district decided that the importance of this presentation, and not only of the Graywater, but by the candidates, was so important that we are actually televising this through our contract with AGP. So we're not only just doing the Graywater meeting, but we're also doing the candidate presentations because we think it's important to get as much information as we can out to the community. So I'd like to thank my board for agreeing to pick that up because I think it is really, really important to the community. And I just wanted, one of the reasons that we decided to have this joint meeting, you know, we're one of the three water purveyors in the district. We have the CSD and the two other water purveyors. But, you know, everybody has to understand that water is our most precious resource. There's a very, very limited supply. And anything that we can do to help conserve and make water available is really, really important, especially as a purveyor, because we're looking at various conservation measures and other things that we can adopt to help with conservation, and gray water is really, really critical to that. As everybody should or could know, is right now in our area we're at a level 3 severity for our groundwater supplies. So we do have a situation that's relatively urgent to address. And gray water is one way that we can help reduce the use of water in the exterior, primarily for landscape purposes, et cetera. And I want everybody to be clear on this. The majority of water used by an individual or by a home is on the exterior. It's not on the interior. So we think this is a very, very valuable tool to use. I forgot to introduce myself, but I'll do that and I'll move on. I'm Marshall Ohilski. I'm president of the CSD.
Maria Kelly, Maria Kelly.
Chuck Cicinia.
We also have two of our staff members here, I think. Dan, could you introduce yourselves?
I'm Dan Gilmore, the CSD General Manager.
Ann Coudart, Administrative Secretary.
Before we start the presentation, I would like to add one more thing, which is thank you all for your help and for your support for this meeting and for having the whole meeting televised, which is a great boon to the community. I agree. Thank you. Good. I did. Would the members who weren't here before please introduce yourselves, your name and your district, please?
Lindy Owen from District 2.
Dick Parker.
Good. Jessica. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Thanks for having us. I'm Jessica Steele. I'm a member of Slow Green Build. I've been with them for 5 years, and I'm a graduate from Cal Poly. Graywater is a particular passion of mine. I work for a general contractor in Atascadero called Sens & Company Builders, and I've had the great fortune to not only be able to study graywater, but to implement the systems. So we're here today to share a little bit of our experience, our work in putting together this manual, and what you can take home and do and implement. This is also...
Mladen Bandoff, and we're members of the Appropriate Technologies Committee. Did you want to do the beginning? Okay. So the Appropriate Technology Coalition is a formation of San Luis Green, Slow Green Build, the Sierra Club, and the Surf Rider Foundation, and community members. And do you know how the starting of it?
Yeah, it was a bunch of us came together. We all had different levels of technical experience, and we wanted to come together to develop a unified device here, a manual, that all the municipalities would buy into, that everyone really supported, to enable people to understand it is legal if you do it properly, and kind of create a step-by-step method to do it. So the coalition came together, starting with Graywater, but we've also come to appreciate other water-saving technologies. We've done a number of presentations, some in this community as well, where we brought in different professionals in their field to share with you, as a community, ways that you can conserve water. Really, the organization, the coalition, is focused on the entire water cycle. That is key. Not any single part can be focused on without context, because it takes appreciation of the entire cycle to keep a healthy, healthy system moving.
Can you address the microphone so that people...
Yes. Sorry, I'm not really used to looking away from everyone.
You can pull it out.
Okay. All right, so I can do jumping jacks and stuff?
Sure.
All right. Okay, I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, that's better. So, again, appreciating the full cycle, there are a lot of... First step is conservation. Before we go into applying any elaborate technologies or simple technologies, conservation is key. As you'll see here, here are a few examples: low-flow shower heads, dual-flush toilets. These things are very standard on the market these days and not unusual. High-efficiency washing machines, I don't think you can even hardly find any that are not these days.
In addition to simply gray water, which is what got us all together, other people have started thinking, gosh, okay, so now that we've developed the gray water manual, what else is next? So low impact development is another manual that the group is working on, and that's essentially maintaining all of the water that flows on your site, keeping it on your site, using rainwater to water the gardens, and recharging the groundwater. As mentioned, that is pretty key. All right, so again, rainwater reuse is really important, managing wastewater, and even getting into some more interesting waterless waste management, which isn't legal in the county yet, but we're still working with the jurisdictions to really come to terms and agreements on what is acceptable and what's not. This is what could happen if we're not careful. Anyway, so we came together to make this guide, and I'd like to mention that Los Osos Community Service Department and LOCAC, they bought 30 of these, and is offered their $10 guide, and they bought 30, and they're offering them at $5 a piece. So that's a great service to you guys, and whatever they don't sell tonight, we'll probably give them, and they can keep them at their facilities and sell however they want. But it's a really generous offer, and it's a great tool. So if anyone wants one tonight, they're for sale outside, half price. All right, so quickly we'll go into the basics of gray water. I don't know how many of you are familiar with gray water and what it is at all. All right, so a good majority of you. So I won't spend too much time on this, but you know, making sure that we all know that first, it's not for drinking. All right, so it's from your shower, your bathtubs, your sinks. It is not from your toilet, your dishwasher, your kitchen sink. The toilet, I guess, is a no-brainer on why that can't be reused in your garden, but your kitchen sink has a lot of particulates, a lot of grease that can really become a problem in harboring bacteria in your garden, so we don't want to reuse that water. And it's only legal for outdoor use at this time. Some key things. First, I'm not sure that a lot of people understand gray water cannot be stored. If it is kept in a container, that's where it really starts to grow bacteria and becomes dangerous to people. It's got a legal stay of 24 hours maximum in a surge tank, but beyond that, it's not okay to store the gray water. It can never touch the surface. That's another rule. Again, you know, there's no recorded issue of someone becoming ill from the use of gray water. However, you know, there are still folks with liability, and they want to make sure that everyone is as safe as possible. And that being said, you're not allowed to irrigate with a sprinkler because of that reason, which makes it quite challenging to water your lawn with gray water. Some other basic rules, you have to keep it on your own property. There are some special circumstances, which I believe Mladen will go into, where you can have a covenant with your neighbor and share your gray water. But for the most part, you can just assume that it's not okay to let it leave your property. And it cannot be connected to any potable water supply because, you know, that would be horrible to get soapy gray water that potentially has, you know, some pathogens in it or something into your water supply, which is horrible.
So don't connect to the irrigation.
No ponding, which we said. And it has to be able to, one of the legal things is that it has to be able, you have to switch it back to your sewer system. You have to be able to. So it can essentially be if you need to do maintenance on it or if the new homeowner decides that it's not a way of life that they would appreciate having, they want to be able to switch it back, or for a number of other reasons you can think of, it has to be able to switch back to the sewer or septic system per code. Again, okay, so no minimizing, or you want to minimize contact with humans, so you have lids locked, you don't want children to be able to access where you have a surge tank or a distribution center for your water, you don't want children to be able to get in there or anyone. Also, you don't want it to touch any parts of a plant you're going to eat. Mladen here, our engineer, is going to go into his experience with code and his studies.
Okay. So the code just changed recently last year. They upgraded it. Before, it was a very unwieldy code. It was back in the mid-90s that they started this. And they pretty much just mimic it, the septic system regulations. And given given kind of the idea, it was more of a disposal of gray water and a recharge locally rather than any sort of reuse. And so it became... it just became a disposal method. They had just leach line or the perforated pipe, and they had like a drip system that really wasn't applicable or readily usable. But last year they changed it. They added mulch basins, which is a more a higher efficient way to water plants and actually get some reuse out of it. And so that went into effect last year. It went into an 18-month kind of review, and it's going to be adopted in next year's code, building code. All right. Yeah. That was Jessica just sent me that one on the left there.
It was taken by a building inspector.
And so, yes, is it legal? Yes, it's legal. And this was always one of the main misconceptions. People always thought it's illegal for the longest time, everyone I ever talked to. But, yeah, it is legal, but we have to follow these rules. So what are the rules? It's an amendment to Chapter 16. There's two parts. The first part deals with the outdoor reuse. And that one is written by the Housing Department, the California Housing and Community Development. And there's more information on the county website. I know some of the cities, like Atascadero, have the link as well. We have it on the Slow Green Build website. And it mainly looks at the systems that can be used for outdoor irrigation, so no use back inside. So the permitting structure that they started off, and I'm going to talk with permitting before we get into systems, just to kind of see where we're at, and specifically in Los Osos. There are four types: a closed washer, and or a single fixture system, a simple system, a complex system, and then the treated gray water. So this is the one that we're advocating a lot, and this is the one you'll see out in the booths here of a washing machine system. This is an easy retrofit. Almost everyone can do this. And the idea was they put this in because they wanted to get some heavy water reuse out, but they didn't want people to cut their pipes and start becoming their own plumbers. And so this was the easiest way to do that. And there's no permit required on that. With that said, I know when we talk with Morro Bay, they still want to know about who's putting in these systems because of hillsides and other systems. But this is the easiest one. This is the one that we kind of advocate everyone can do. Green Goods has kits available, and there's also instructions in the handbook about how to make one. It's pretty simple. So as long as you don't cut any pipes, you're good. The simple system... this one does require a permit, and this one is if you're less than 250 gallons per day. This one has a dual plumbing kind of setup. You're connecting certain pipes from the house. It may include pumps. It may include tanks. Basically, if you cut a plumbing line and you're less than 250, this is a simple system. And then if you're more than 250, say you're in a multi-family unit, you're going to need permit, but then also a competent person to design it, such as myself, an engineer or a landscaping contractor or whoever. And then this was the fourth category, the treated water, and this is where the water comes back into the house. They are right now, in fact, yesterday they just had a meeting on talking about the standards of what the water reuse back in the house would be. My guess it's going to be very similar to the purple pipe, Title 22. They're talking about that, but as of yet, we can't reuse it back for toilet flushing. So into a little bit of the design. So you're wanting to build your own system or to do your own system, and mainly we're kind of showing you some of the basic systems. where you can plumb it and calculate it out yourself. This is a water bill. I know here in Los Osos, the CSD is on a bi-monthly. Is Golden State the same as well? So this is, I just took this one. This is an actual client, and the water number of units are on the left. And so you see the variation. The baseline would be what is used inside. I think this is two people, if I remember correctly. And then the kind of the peaks are, that's what the irrigation is. And you can see as it starts getting later into the summer, it gets higher. So how would you, if you looked at your own water bill and kind of mapped it out this way, this is kind of what you would come up with. You have a winter wet of maybe 5 or 6 units. For two people, that's, you know, 2 to 3 units per person. And in the summertime per month, you have slightly higher. And so the idea of using twice as much or almost half your total water use for irrigation is pretty accurate for most people. So a 1 unit per month is about 25 gallons per day. Just keep that in mind. So this was a study done a decade ago, but still applies, and the number looks really high. And you think it is, and then I asked Dan about the number here, and in Los Osos, the indoor use is about 62 gallons per day. So it's on par for indoor use only. And that's about 2 or 3 units per person. So the study went further and broke it down into actual use, and this is what they came up with. And one of the first things is that pops out is that there's a leak. 10 gallons per day is leaks and other sources. So if you just fix your leaks, you're saving water there. That's probably the water audit is probably the most important first step to take. And I think there are people who specialize in water audits, and they look at all your water usage. But then once you get past that, you get into about 40 gallons per day is your gray water use, and that can be reused back into the landscape. So say we're starting and we want to do some calculations and figure out where we're at. First, you need to know kind of your bedroom count, and the building code kind of designs per bedroom count. We have you count 2 people for the first bedroom, and then you count 1 person for each additional. I mean, very simple math here. 3-bedroom house is 4 occupants. Keeping that in mind, they've kind of figured out that showers, tubs, and sinks is about 25 gallons per day. A washing machine uses about 15 gallons per day per occupant. And then just multiply those 2 out, and you get your total flow that you need to design for in your house. You guys with me here? All right. Now, the next step is to figure out what your soil and what your landscape can take. Sandy soils have fast percolation rates. Clay soils have slow percolation rates. And that's important to know. Here in Los Osos, we have a lot of sand. One way to figure this out is to do a percolation test. There's some general guidelines that the county has for doing when you do a septic system, so I kind of just took those and put them into the book and just kind of used them. And then the manual shows a little more detail about this, but here's some pictures of just dig a hole, put a stick with some markings on it every 1/4 inch, and then record it over 6 hours, and the last drop becomes your minutes per inch, and then you plug that into here's a chart you can use to record that. I have these. If you are on the mailing list, I can send you some worksheets, and you can look at, say, sandy loam is somewhere between 18 to 23 minutes per inch. If your test ends up becoming that, you look over and you see that your soil absorption rate is 0.4 square feet per gallon per day. So that becomes an important number to use to calculate how much you need to flow or how much you need to have an area for. So then what is that required area? And say we're using the sand. So we had the total flow of 160 gallons per day. We did a perk test, or you knew it from your soil records or from a boring drilling log of what it is. You multiply those out, and then it comes to an area of 64 square feet. So that's pretty much all the math that there's involved. Sorry if that kind of got a little boring there. But given that, then after that, you can kind of decide how you're going to put it into the ground. And there's a set we have in the guide. We collected from everywhere all the different types of systems that were out there, and people were very creative. The one that was kind of the most popular, and I think, Jessica, you put this one in as well, this was a flower pot emitter. It's basically a 5-gallon bucket or a flower pot that you can, if you have an extra one lying around, has a hole in the top, you can pipe into that. You create a little basin area underneath, and that can go straight into that area that you create, that basin area. That is part of the area that you need to have. So that 64 square feet, if you have a 3x3, you have 9 feet already, and just multiply that out, then you need nine or however many, seven flower pot emitters at that point. So what are some of the elements of a system? The first is you need some way to switch it, which was part of the requirement. This is a three-way valve that I got at a spa place. It's actually a rather expensive valve, but we installed it in for a shower system, a single unit shower system. A client wanted to have just a bathtub, and so she would fill it up to 60 gallons every time she took a bath, and she just felt bad that it kept going down the drain. So we put this switch in, and it stays wherever the handle is. It points to the direction of the system, either the gray water or back to the septic. If ever you need to do maintenance or you ever need to do it's a wet season, you don't want to overwater or whatever the case may be, you can easily switch it back. There's other creative ways to do this as well. You can use a pair of ball valves, or you can figure it out, but there's got to be some way to switch it. And then the surge capacity. Like, given the situation with the shower or the bathtub, and you have 60 gallons that's hitting the system right away, if you don't have a way to surge and prevent that from going slower into the lines, it's just going to blow out everything down, all your emitters and whatever system you have. So here's an example of... Oh, actually, that slide was supposed to be before. All new plumbing should have dual plumbing, which is separating out the gray water and the black water systems. And retrofits, if it's feasible. Sometimes it's not easy if you're on a slab foundation. It's not it's a difficult and costly way to do it. But all new construction should really consider it, because the cost for having a dual plumbing is not that much compared to what the benefit is. So going back to the surge tank now. There's two ways. There's a gravity one, and then there's a pumped one. We have filters showing in here, and there's a choice in that. You don't have to have a filter, but you have to consider what's downstream and what you're putting it into. And there's specs on how to put it together. Here's one that we put together. It has an overflow that there is no valve on, so it will always overflow. It has a locking lid. To prevent anyone from getting in. It's got a hole that we can put in a vent if we need to. And then they have a valve to help kind of meter the flow that comes out. And there's another system that Art Ludwig, who kind of really pioneered a lot of the gray water, kind of for the longest time doing it yourself. And he developed a branch drain system. And this one... uses no surge tank and kind of uses all the twists and turns and the branching of the system to split the flow as it goes and evenly distribute it. This one is a very difficult system to implement, because you have to be very meticulous. Your slopes have to be right. Your your splitting has to be right. One little change and you could get a lot of backing up in one area and not another. And here's kind of an example of what a branch system would be. If you want to know more information, Art also has more details on that, but we have it in the manual. And then one of the last elements of is having an absorption field. And I'm just going to talk about the fields the way that they describe it in the new law and how this came from the septic system designs. So the disposal field, how they call it out, is anything kind of like with a pipe, with a leach trench, and they just call it disposal field. And there's a general way you can design it, but this is not necessarily the most effective way, but it's basically a mini leach field. The second is a drip system. Now, when it comes to gray water, and this is something that I can go in for hours on drip systems, but any standard drip system will clog if it's not filtered. And so you don't want to put a gray water system through a drip system without having some level of filtration. And the units that they do have will work to a point, but if you really want to, you know, have the life of your drip lines last, you need to have really high filtration. That comes at a cost, and that comes at a maintenance level that some people may or may not want to do. We have kind of little examples of these automated sand filters that are basically pool filters that are expensive but really work well with giving you a good quality water to put into your drip lines. And then the third one is the mulch basin. And this is the one that I was mentioning before that really made it easy to reuse your water. Basically, it's a hole filled with mulch. And as long as it doesn't pond and you sized it correctly, you're good to go. And I know I was talking with Barry Toll just a few days ago, and he's been going out and seeing neighbors who have had their washing machine units just like overflowing onto their neighbor's property and spilling over, and that's just causing a nuisance and it's an odor. So if you're going to do this, just make sure you build it big enough. And it could just be a couple feet deep, and we have kind of instructions on how to do that as well. But just make sure that it's covered, and the mulch will take care of any laundry water or shower water, and it'll go into it and kind of hide it. So as long as it doesn't pond, you're good with the mulch basin. So this is just a quick breakdown of the different systems that we have in the guide and kind of the three categories that they fall into. And then, so now you have you're picking one of those emitter ends. You kind of picked whether you're going to have a surge system, whether you're going to have a branch system. Now it's time to lay out your site. One thing you have to know is that you have to make sure your system is away from certain things. Like it can't be too close to structures. If you have a well on site, you've got to maintain a distance from that. You've got to maintain a certain distance from property lines. It's written in there. There have been a few changes since last year, and we put out these guides before the new code came out. So there's a few changes that we have, but basically you just need a site plan and draw it out, and if you have any questions, share it with someone who does know. They can look over it. They can identify things. They can walk your property. And that's part of the requirement that you have to keep these setbacks. And then another two conditions, and this one was an issue with in Los Osos, is the seasonally high groundwater, and that's in a lot of areas. The requirement is 3 feet. If you are less than 3 feet, I was talking with Lawson about this and saying that some people, you know, it comes up to the ground level. Maybe a gray water system is not necessary for you. Maybe you have enough water as it is, or maybe too much water, and there's issues with flooding as well. If you do have the 3 feet separation, then go ahead and follow this. If you don't, talk to a professional. There are ways that these can be handled, but I don't want to discuss that in too much detail here. But if high groundwater is a problem, maybe
maybe gray water is not the issue for the solution for your property. The second thing is always keep 2 inches of cover on top of everything. This is where the no surfacing comes into play. And depending on how you want to do that, whether it's soil or mulch or rocks, but those are the other two requirements. So then using your manual, we kind of laid out Michael calls these recipe cards of just, okay, how do you want to put it into the ground? And we don't have any, once you have your calculations and you know how much area you need, follow the recipe cards and just it'll tell you how many different things you need, whether you need like 3 flower pot emitters and a tree watering moat, you know, a leech line. It'll kind of show you into in the manual there. And so here was the stress of the laundry landscape system. This is kind of what it looks like. And like I said, there was kits that are put together already for this. There's instructions here. You can go out and into your hardware store and buy them and install this and make a mulch basin for it and divert it straight into a tree. The trees would like these. And we'll talk about the detergents and the salt issues that come from having a laundry system. There's an example. I think that's going out to a flower pot emitter by gravity. So kind of what one looks like there. Okay, so here's just a quick overview of some of the systems. The flower pot emitter, if you got small trees or shrubs, this one works pretty well, especially with gravity. This is a good one. A pump surge tank works well. Let's see. A tree watering moat, this one's just a moat. There's no bucket or way to access it. Again, this one you got to make sure it doesn't overflow. That's why there's those berms on the edge. And they're kind of all very similar. People kind of came up with their own ideas, and they're pretty much based in the same ideas. And then the drip system. This one for lawns or clay soils or even slope sites. Again, this one is a very expensive one. To put in because you need all the filtration, you need the pumps, you need all the systems. There are manufacturers that make systems for drip and for lawn, but that's your call, of course. You know, if you want the lawn, but lawns use a lot of water, and it's not necessarily recommended. And then Jessica did a case study.
Yeah, as I said, I have the pleasure of working for a general contractor. And we worked with the local chief building inspector, Dave Milhausen. And, you know, he wasn't very familiar with gray water when we started working with him. And he knows, as the rest of us do, that we're in a water crunch and that we need to start opening our minds and our technology bases to really appreciating these. So we worked with him. He really did buy into the book here during the process development, so he knew if we worked out of it that it was going to be a successful technology. So it was actually the first permitted system in Atascadero, and so I just wanted to walk you through some of the processes and what we submitted. So the city has their own permit system, and you just go in and you get just the permit card that you got to fill out, the application. And I have some samples over at the Slow Green Build table if you're interested. And I essentially went through the process that Mladen just walked you through. However, we, in this case, only took 4 fixtures. So instead of using the lump sum of 25 gallons per person per day, we were able to use simply the quantity from those individual fixtures. So the sinks were rated at, depending on the size there, so 3, and then the RO unit was the last one. And the RO unit was really interesting, and we were really pleased to tie that in, because on an RO system, typically for every 1 gallon of drinking water you get out of an RO system, you're dumping 3 gallons into the sewer or septic system. So that's really, really wasteful, and it's perfectly clean water. There's nothing wrong with it. It just has a slightly higher concentration of minerals because you've pulled a gallon of water out of it that has no minerals in it. So being able to utilize that water in your garden is pretty, pretty wonderful. So we did our estimated, and also this was a house. It was, it is 3 bedrooms or 2 bedrooms. And so you have the master bedroom and then an additional bedroom. So that's 3 people. We were able to calculate the total square footage of irrigation space needed at 25 square feet. And so we decided we wanted to use the flower pot emitter because it really is one of the most affordable methods that you can use. It's really, really simple. And so we submitted this document here, simply done on an Excel spreadsheet, compiled and highlighted with the system we wanted to use. And the building inspector was really happy and pleased as this was part of our submittal package. Here's a schematic of the system that we installed. So as you see, we have the water sources on the left, the sinks, the RO unit, and the washing machine. Note, though, that the washing machine still needed its own 3-way valve, as was illustrated on the laundry to landscape sheet. The reason for this is that if you're going to wash some dirty diapers, they want you to be able to switch back to the sewer side really, really conveniently. And also really, really soiled clothes if you're a mechanic, greasy and... Or if you want to use bleach. That's the other thing, is you never, ever want to dump bleach into your gray water system. That's pretty obvious. All right, so then you go through what's called a bull run diverter valve, and any sort of diverter valve will work, but you need to be able to, as the water exits the home, send it to the gray water system or to the sewer system. As you'll see, going down the sheet there, as it ties into the sewer system, you need a backflow prevention device so that the sewer, if there was some issue in the slab and the sewer backed up, that would never enter your gray water system. It's pretty key, and the building inspector was darn adamant about that part of it. Then we go to a distribution box. It's simply a concrete box that's level. Water comes in, and then it's split into thirds, and it's dispersed that way into our 3. We calculated we need 3 flower pot emitters. At each flower pot emitter, I don't know if you remember in the slides Mauden showed, but there's a valve that will allow, so you can manipulate if one's getting too much water, if one's downhill a little bit, you can manipulate the flow. And then the outlet into the gravel pits, and we are doing grasses and native trees in those locations. Here's a picture of the slab before we poured. You can see there the 2 drains right next to each other on the right. That's our washing machine. So as you'll see, you need both the diverter valve there, so you can go to the gray water or to the sewer system. And then you'll see the sewer just connects the other ones, and then the gray water goes out the side of the stem wall there. Here's a picture of the diverter valve outside the house. So again, you can go to the left to the sewer or to the right to the gray water system. And the round device there, that's the backflow preventer. This is a picture. It was during the middle of a rainstorm, unfortunately. Go right ahead. But there's the valve that we buried and then the flower pot emitter. But normally there would never be water in it, but it is in the middle of a rainstorm. So maintenance is pretty key also. That's really something that you need to appreciate when you're deciding to adopt a gray water system into your life. If there are filters on your pump or your surge tank, you need to make sure that you clean those out semi-regularly. And then if you have a flower pot emitter type scenario, you can be able to check and make sure so that you never have the ponding or that it never backs up. There are plants that like gray water and plants that don't. And if you're really attached to certain plants, you're going to want to do a little bit of research before you commit to putting a gray water to irrigate them. We have some contractors here tonight who have a lot of experience in landscape, and so they're going to talk here at the end when we're going to do an open Q&A session, and everyone can share their own experience, and they'll tell you which plants are just great for gray water in Los Osos. There are some other considerations. I already kind of went into the reverse osmosis situation, and I encourage you, even if you don't have a full-on gray water system, but you do have an RO unit, try to just get that water out the house and into the flower bed outside. It's just pretty amazing how much water, perfectly pure water, gets dumped into the sewer. Water softeners are something a lot of us have. Different areas and jurisdictions here have different requirements for them. But one thing is that water softeners regenerate. And what they do is they put sodium and potassium and or potassium chloride into the water. When they filter out calcium and magnesium so that you don't get calcification and scaling on your equipment, your boilers, your dishwasher, or your shower wall. So they have a definite purpose, but what happens is the sodium concentration is really bad for your plants. So the thing is, when water just passes through and goes into your shower, you're okay. The concentrations aren't that strong. But for every 100 gallons of water that goes through your water softener, it regenerates. And a bunch of gallons go out into the yard, and that has a really, really, really concentrated potassium chloride or sodium chloride. And that's the kind of water you do not want connected into your gray water system. So just be really, really aware. If you do have a water softener, it takes some consideration, and you'll want to look into that in more detail. And again, that's addressed in the gray water manual as well. It does take an adjustment as well in your lifestyle, because you cannot put bleach, no Drano, no aggressive detergents. And so you definitely want to pay attention to what you're putting down your drain. Think, if you don't want it on your plants, don't put it down the drain if you're connected to a gray water system.
So when we presented this to the to the cities and districts, they came up with, okay, what are some of the challenges that we're going to come up with? Cross-connection was definitely an issue, and as we were mentioning about the backflow prevention devices, that is a key part, that the sewer or septic system doesn't back up into your system. Unintended reuse, like, again, using it for toilets or shower water, only using it for, right now, irrigation until we get some systems that can clean to the level that they need back and reuse it back into toilets. And then identification was the big one. Purple pipe is a very specific designation for Title 22 clean water, recycled, reclaimed water. And I know the water purveyors stressed how much this is their product that they're selling back to, or they're giving to their clients, and they're reusing it, and they just didn't want a mix-up. And I think Michael was mentioning, or someone was mentioning, about yellow or some other colors being used for untreated gray water. Then it's going to be the question, well, what happens when it's treated gray water? Where does, you know, and then we got rainwater, we got storm water, we got RO water. You know, I mean, we've got a whole non-potable designation nightmare. And then the last part was having standards and limits, or having standards and meeting those standards for any system that does treat. And actually, the National Sanitation Foundation is right now coming up with a product or a testing protocol for products to meet gray water reuse. And right now they have a task force that they're talking about. You know, how are we going to test this to meet some sort of limit so that people can reuse it back into their toilets? And then, so for Los Osos, this is the information for Barry Toll. I talked to him, really nice guy. As far as permitting goes, if you're a single fixture or washing machine fixture, you don't need a permit. You don't need to go through that process. But he's very excited and helpful to want, if you have any questions or you want him to look at your project for Los Osos, he will be very helpful and guide you on that process. So feel free to ask him any questions. He does, like he told me, he does get calls and he goes out and sees when someone is doing it wrong and it's going into the neighbor's yard, it's overflowing. He's a good source. And then also anyone, any plumber, green plumber here, landscapers, we're all knowledgeable on helping out with that. And before we open up for questions and answers, I did want to say most of everything that we have was for doing it yourself and being able to go out, you know, piping but always if you have any questions, consult a professional. And I wanted to bring up some devices that are out there specifically for gray water. Here in the United States, we're not all that active, but Australia is, and they have a water crisis even far greater than ours, I'm sure. So here's just so that you have an example of other than the surge tanks, this system here, I think someone's selling it locally, but you have some three-dimensional filters that you can pull out, and they go in different orders, and then it goes into like a surge tank size. And, oh, by the way, this is Justin Smith with Potter Plumbing, and he and I work together on installing and doing systems. And then it has a pump inside, just like with a float switch already built in. And there's another component that does the overflow part. And so a unit like this could be installed very easily. This would flow to a drip system that you would bury, and then hopefully the filters can clog or it can filter out well enough. If not, then you'll just replace the drip system at some point. Yes. But so there are products, and we're hoping that more people are developing them here as well. We do the designs. But this manual is supposed to empower you to come up with your own designs. We've kind of come up with as many options that are out there and kind of collected. This is how you go through the process. Feel free to ask any of us for more. Oh, and then one last thing. We do have a survey that we wanted to get from all of you, if you would like. It's... just ask a few basic questions like how much do you conserve, what kind of equipment would you be interested in, how much would you pay for such equipment, and this is kind of to help with rebates because right now there are no gray water rebates. There are for low flow. There was a tax credit that was in a Senate bill, I think, or Assembly bill that was in the process, but it got killed. And so it's there, but at the same time there. So if you could, we would appreciate the survey here. Yeah, it'll be at the green at the slow green build table. So that's our presentation. Questions?
So we wanted to open it up for questions and bring all the contractors in who are still here and interested in participating. I don't know if you guys want to like come up to the front over here or just pipe in. I mean, we can just have a general discussion. I don't know how they're going to feel because of the microphone and camera situation, but everyone just has a lot of different expertise, and I thought it'd be great for us all to be able to enjoy that. AGP, do you care? Should we all come over here, or is that okay? Yeah. Okay, you guys want to come over here? Is that cool? And then if anyone has questions, I guess we pass the mic around. Is that how this works?
Yeah. Jessica? while the folks are coming in and the vendors are getting settled, a couple of things. We're not going to have a formal break this evening, so if anyone wants to use the facilities, they are through that door and all the way to the back. And this is a good time for you to also pick up the candidate statements, which are on the back table
Okay.
So any questions?
Yeah.
Are you going to moderate?
Yeah, my question is about...
There you go. My question is about gray water ponding systems, because I have friends that have some really, really effective gray water ponds with biological filtration systems, and then they go out to some for reuse. Obviously, this isn't locally. They're in other locations. How come gray water ponding systems aren't legal here, and is there any way that we can, you know, do anything about making them legal to where we can utilize that kind of system?
Yeah, I can get that one. Again, it's the surfacing of the gray water. We can't allow surfacing directly as it comes out. There is that filtration element, that treatment, and once it kind of goes into that treatment classification, and like a wetlands or a reed bed, which we do list in the manual, but still as of yet is not allowed in an urban setting the way that we have it, but we were just trying to explore all the different ways that people are doing this. That makes, once we're in the treatment, then that's going to fall into the second part that I was mentioning about the regulations. Hopefully that they're in the task force, they're discussing exactly this idea. If you run it through a subsurface wetlands or an aquatic open ponding system, will that be allowed? And that will be addressed in this next by the Department of Water Resources. They're coming up with that that standard. Yeah,
I think also that, you know, that technique is used with John Todd's Living Machines and Blackwater. And, you know, it's a technique that puts a high amount of filtration, you know, to any water source, and might be a little bit more complex than necessary for just gray water. Gray water is not, you know, that level, not necessarily needing that intense of a filtration system. So you can do it with a lot of these more simple methods where it's going straight into a soil media, and then you're getting a lot of microorganism, you know, working for free into, you know, helping with that water quality change. So it could be, you know, depending on the size and the scale and the cost of your systems, what you'd want to do is, you know, an aesthetic point. Would you want to pond it? Would you want to do it as, you know, like a living machine and treat all of your household wastewater instead of having a septic or a sewer? So there's a lot of options that go into that. And I think that, you know, maybe what would be first would be cost prohibitive, and then, you know, as of right now, you know, illegal with just surface contact. So
that's all I would say.
The alternative right now is biocells or open cells underground, so you incur a lot of costs in implementing those systems. And this is Sonia's. And there's a number of products that do it differently, but it does keep it from surfacing, and it is legal. And so you can create underground reservoirs equal to the size of ponding basins that allow the infiltration. Yeah, I have.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, we can all participate in this.
I have a question.
Please do.
There we go. At our property, we have fruit trees and whatever vegetable garden we plant at the lowest part of the lot. So the drainage is going to be in that direction. Does that mean you can't use this, or what sort of distance do you need?
From the property line?
No. Back of the lot is the lowest point.
Yeah.
Okay? House is at the front of the lot. Whatever's going to drain out of there is going to go out of the house, and it's going to go downhill when you put it into the ground. How far away does that drainage point have to be from the trees and vegetables that are way down there? Or can you not do it? Because we've only got about an 80-foot run.
Right.
That's in the appendix. There's a plant appendix. I think it's page 28 in the gray water manual. And it talks about plants that are favorable to gray water use, and kind of like that slide that showed plants that do like the more alkaline base as opposed to that. But as long as the gray water is not touching any edible parts of your vegetables or fruits, then it is completely safe to use as regular drinking water. So as long as you're not having any surface contact to the edible parts of the plant, then you can use gray water on your vegetable garden.
Wait. You mean that you can have a fruit tree right here, and you can have your outfall into the ground, 1 foot in front of it, and it goes downhill past the roots of the fruit tree, and that fruit is edible.
That's correct.
All I needed. Thank you.
Alon, you had a question? Since Vicky's preoccupied, huh?
Yes. Well, I have actually a little bit of good news. This is the Gray Water Manual copy from the Los Osos Library. It's available there, but you have to know where to look for it. You will go, if you ask for the reference librarian, it actually happens to be right next to the EIR. Additionally, as of Tuesday, it's present in the downtown library in SLO, and it's also in the referent desks, and if you ask for it by name, you can get it there. It's available online. I'm going to try and get it into the rest of the libraries in the county. But there are a few challenges. One of the challenges is that when you have a rental situation, the three-way valve, I believe, relates to the washing machine is probably the hardest element, which is when you have a rental situation, when you have potentially babies or occasionally with geriatrics, you do have to be able to have whoever uses it be able to switch back between the gray water and the black water. That's kind of a statement that can be a question. Another question is, do you actually need to have the surge tank if you take the laundry machine out of the system? And finally, as far as Los Osos is concerned, in the future, the project may need to also allow for rainwater collection on very small lots. So hopefully the newer manuals that I know you're still, is it's
right.
A work in progress,
yeah.
Those will have to be able to prevent a crossing of the streams between the gray water and the rainwater collection systems.
Right, and also keep stay on our mailing list as well on the SLO Green Build or the Surf Rider or the Sierra Club mailing list. We'll send updates as the law changes, as there's more information coming up. And there are a few tweaks that we do need to make to this manual as well. Starting from the back, going forward, as far as the rainwater, and I'm assuming you're talking about using the septic tanks, what's going to happen with them, I don't want to speak too much about that per se, but if the rainwater tanks are being, if the septic tank is going to be used for rainwater harvesting and collection and they're going to be used for irrigation, that is going to be a very specific situation, and there's really been no precedent before about how that's going to work out. So that's going to require the officials to look at, that's going to require professionalism on some level to come up with how is that going to affect it. The idea is that right now there is no other non-potable source and not, you know, crossing those streams. So, right. And what was the what were the other questions?
Sorry about that. In fact, that was the one question that was something that would have to move forward at a different time. The question is, there's a problem with surge. The surging is actually caused by the motor inside the washing machine. But if you can allow your septic tank to receive it, do you actually need to have that surge tank if all it's collecting is from the bath, from the sink? If you only use those sources, bath and sinks, bathroom.
Yeah.
Is it? Do you really need to have the surge tank? That's.
Well, there's two issues going on with the surge tank, or why you would have it. One is to prevent an overflow of your surging. The second thing would be to how you would water. Say you did have a pump, you didn't want to cycle every time you turn on the faucet. You would like a volume to build up a day's worth and pump that all at once. And throughout the day, you're going to collect water. So there's kind of two approaches to that issue. As far as not needing it, if you can do without it and you can build a system that doesn't have a surge tank, that would be ideal. But again, that requires careful planning and making sure that you don't overflow. And that's something that requires a lot of hands-on care to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Okay. Do we have other questions from? Good. There you go.
Sure.
We're going to defer to the public. Okay.
I just wanted to clarify whether using kitchen sink wastewater is actually against code, and how likely it would be. How likely is it that the kitchen wastewater would have a negative effect on your foliage?
The dishwasher and the kitchen sink contain organic material in it, and as of now, it is not within the definition of gray water. It's too high in organics. Organics, what they do is they'll cause bacteria to grow, their particulates. Just think about putting grease down your kitchen sink. Think about using a garbage disposal. All these will contribute to your system clogging, especially if you have little leach lines. How a septic tank works, and this is specifically for Los Osos, is it has settling capability, and so it does filtration through settling. It settles that actually better than most filters can, and so that settling action gets that effluent that comes out of the septic tank with less solids than actually an untreated gray water stream, which has more solids at even without the kitchen.
Michael, in the back. we'll get our chance.
Thanks a lot, first, for making the presentation. Great information. It's a little bit tricky with the codes and so on, but once I think people are aware of exactly what the parameters are, it'll be easy to install these systems. Along those lines, we started a group called the Los Osos Sustainability Group, and we're supporting an integrated conservation program that would be indoor and outdoor implemented with the project.
What's the question?
That's for the prohibition zone. Excuse me. And so what we're suggesting is that if you do it in an integrated fashion like that, you can look at the lot for all the opportunities, whether it be gray water, rainwater, and whatever. But what it also allows you the opportunity...
Could you finish up your comment, please? This is a time for questions and not statements.
I know that, and I'm getting to the question.
Okay.
So what I'm suggesting is that with that kind of implementation, where it's community-wide and not just on an individual basis, it allows the opportunity for some standardization and for the possibility of permitting that is a broad permit or a community-wide permit. Because when there's, the way I understand it, with individual permitting, it is rather costly. So you have individual designs and somebody comes out to look at your individual design. So what I'm suggesting is that in terms of Los Osos, any other community that is looking at these things on a large scale, let's talk with Barry Cole. And I imagine Greenville is probably in the process of doing some of this. And find out how there can be sort of a blanket permitting, because I think it gets into hundreds of dollars to get a permit for some of these systems. And then you also have the opportunity of integrating it with rainwater as well. So the question is, what do you see as the opportunity for blanket permits to bring the cost down?
Does anyone have any specific questions on... Oh, did you have another comment?
Well, the workshop I took with the Green Plumbers USA was really just an advisory, is to lean on your congressman, lean on the people that are in charge of lobbyists or senators, anybody you can email that's in Congress for state and county government, and all that stuff helps. And the permitting process can get easier, but you do have to, talk to your representatives, and they are the ones that are going to make your changes for you. So best to email them and let them know that you feel strongly about having something changed.
Yeah, and especially the rebates and tax credits, that is another thing that will incentivize and get this actually more prevalent.
This might have been mentioned earlier, but the city of Morro Bay, they only want $75 to cover the manpower time to come out and just make sure you're not polluting the neighbor's property with gray water. It's basically that simple. It's not that expensive.
The county right now, when I talk with Barry again, he is not, if you are under 25 gallons or 250 gallons per day, excuse me, and you have the simple system, he's not issuing a permit at this time. He's going by the code or the new regulation.
Okay. I'd like to move now to some questions from the members of the CSD and LOCAC, starting with Marshall.
No, I just wanted the people on the contractors to introduce themselves because I don't think anybody knows who they are or what their background is. So,
okay. Yeah, well, thank you. My name is Josh Carmichael, and I grew up here in Los Osos in landscape contractor. I'm here tonight with our Landscape Contractor Association as a board member and helped on the Slow Green Build Coalition Appropriate Technology write the gray water manual and the LID manual. From our field.
I'm Gabriel Frank from Gardens by Gabriel. I'm out of Morro Bay. Yeah, we're a local ecological design and build contractor firm. The water harvesting reclamation is just one arm of the environmental services that we provide.
Hi, I'm Gary Glandon, general contractor, DBA, Stormwise Sustainable Solutions. I'm currently addressing LID and BMPs required for stormwater management and how to reuse that water and keep it from running off site. And there's also gray water use involved in that and rainwater.
My name is Justin Smith, and I own Potter Plumbing Incorporated up in Cambria, and I've been a green plumber for a few years now. I've been putting in gray water systems for about that long, and water recycling is something I specialize in, and I think that gray water is probably the next wave of the future for plumbers, and water recycling is really important because we are all in need of saving water, and we're in a serious situation on all the coasts of saltwater intrusion in all of our wells, and we are running out of the natural resource that's most precious to us. So it's good to save some water with water recycling and gray water systems.
Thank you, Vicki. I just thought
Excuse
it was important that we got them introduced.
Some people have asked, when is this going to air? It is airing live right now, and if you call AGP Video at 772-2715, they will let you know when it's going to air. Okay, go ahead.
Vicki, I thought it was important that we knew who they were, so I wanted to give them the opportunity to introduce
You're absolutely
them.
Right.
That was the only question I had, though.
Keith, you had a question?
I just wanted to know what you can realize or expect in water savings by, do you break it down to washing machines or just the whole system itself? What's the average?
You mean cost-wise?
No, just water savings.
Water savings. Okay, well, from that pie chart that I'd shown, if you took 70 gallons per day per person, 40 gallons per day is gray water. And that could be reused. So a little more than half of the water could be reused very easily. So water savings. Some people don't irrigate at all. In fact, when I was doing a talk in Cambria, some people threw out numbers of what their water units usage was, and some irrigation was zero. Like they don't water at all. It's rock landscape or hardscape. I know that there's like dry creek type situations, native plantings after a few years. There's no need for that. When you get to that level, then the water savings drop off when you're talking about gray water because that's where the reuse is happening. We will get into the toilet reuse at some point, but that's not here now. So more than half.
Wendy?
Can dictate, you know, some cost savings, but something like a laundry to landscape system, you're looking at the kit to get the three-way valve from the septic to the garden, and installed total from the three-way valve to the drip system out in the garden, you're probably looking around $500 or so for that. up to 100 feet of tubing, and then something of the integrated leach field, or you know, the type of kind of dry creek bed stream system. You know, you might look at you know, the plant and rock material side, and labor might run you double that to maybe 1,500. Those are rough costs. It really depends on the site and right. You know, what is going into it.
$1,000 would be the few systems that I were just simple sump, surge tank, and then surge tank or gravity feed. The gravity feed systems are the most economical. Those are probably right around that $500 range. As soon as you add a pump, you add a filter, you add just a little more labor, up into probably around $1,000.
Yeah, the payoff is could be anywhere between a couple years to 5 years to 10 years, depending on how easy is it to access the system.
Yeah, sorry about that. The system that we installed, which was permitted, and the permit ran a $200 fee in Atascadero, and with all the parts and labor, it came in right at about that $1,000 mark. And now Atascadero City has a very affordable water, the mutual company there. So at the moment, the return on the investment isn't immediate. However, it's very responsible, and as we all know, price on water is going to go up. So that return will shrink over time. But even with the permit, you're looking at about $1,000, and that was with a contractor performing the work. And so if you did it yourself, bought the materials and, you know, dug the holes and everything, you would definitely save on that labor. And there's nothing that you really wouldn't be able to do as long as, you know, you can get someone to dig that hole.
And I have another question. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's a
test 1-2. No.
On to bigger systems, if you spend a little more, I have numbers with rainwater collection combined with gray water systems that I have numbers that show a return on investment in 5 years. It is actually more aggressive than solar savings if you do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use a lot of water, and then it does depend on your setup and what's available at Carmen.
Could we take a...
I had a couple other questions. Could I finish, or did you want to take a break?
No, we're going to be wrapping up the question and answer in a couple of minutes. I wanted to see if we had any more folks in our audience who have questions. If not, we'll go right back to Lindy. Okay, Lindy, thank you.
Thank you. I had another question. Jessica mentioned that the front loaders, all the washing machines are high efficiency now, and I understand that the front loaders are much lower water use, and they actually take almost all the water out of the clothes because the spin cycle is different. And so am I wrong, or I'm not sure if the top loaders have come up to that level.
The top loaders have improved as well. You know, just like the toilets nowadays, you can't buy anything but a 1.6 gallon, for example. Just the general technology has improved. However, as you mentioned, the front loaders are the way to go. And if you can just imagine the technology there, you've got this small amount of water in the bottom and the clothes go through it. You don't need to fill the whole tub up to get the clothes wet. So, and that being said, that technology being out so long at this point, that really you're able to find front loaders that are not this super high-end item. You can find them in the same budget realm that you'd be able to find a standard top-load washer.
Okay, great. And on that same vein, I'm real familiar with Art Ludwig's work, and I've been using his Oasis soap.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's an outlet. I have to order it through a catalog, but is there an outlet anywhere in the county to get Oasis soap, or should we start promoting it? Because it actually is it's a fertilizer for your soil, and it's an excellent, excellent product for laundry.
Does anyone
too.
Sell it here?
Shine Cafe in Morro Bay, or Sunshine Foods in Morro Bay has it on Morro Bay Boulevard.
I think.
And also Green Goods.
Green Goods has it too.
In San Luis.
Yeah, the thing about the Oasis soap is it doesn't have the sodium content. Even biodegradable soaps still have high salt in it. That's one thing to think about. So even if it says biodegradable, it does not necessarily mean that it has low salt, and that's the key factor for plants.
There's a short preferred list of soap products in the gray water management.
I have a comment, and I would like to say thank you so much to Jessica Maladen for the hard work and the emails and the discussion, and I am so grateful and appreciative of you coming and taking the time and working with our constraints as well as our opportunity. So thank you so much for your time, and thank you to the contractors as well. I really, really appreciate it.
And we do have one more question, comment. Hang on, hang about, guys. Joe.
Thank you for coming. I have one question. You sure. Showed a number of utilities, sewer, water, but are there any other requirements for other utilities not mentioned, particularly gas lines?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Are there any other separation requirements for other underground utilities not mentioned, such as gas lines?
The big one is water. You don't want the potable and non-potable or waste streams getting close to each other and having a cross-contamination in the field. But as far as water lines to utilities, that's not specifically mentioned or called out. So, no.
Good. Thank you. All right. I would like to add LOCAC's thanks for you coming out and how much we appreciate all of the information and your time. And for those of you who have been paying attention, there have been many, many mentions of permitting. And Marshall discussed why the CSD was interested in having this presentation. I think it's time for me to discuss why LOCAC was also interested. We're all about land use matters in Los Osos. And land use, of course, includes water usage, water sources, so forth and so on. And if you should put in a project that requires permitting, one of the stops along the way in that process is going to be a perusal of your request and your project by LOCAC and the Land Use Committee and then the full LOCAC. Yes, you're right, if it's discretionary. Okay, so we'll find that out. All right. I think we do actually have a natural break time now as we're switching out computers and sorry, didn't think of a suitor. As we're switching out computers, and I would like to make it 5 minutes. 5 minutes, and this would be a good time for the candidates, for our candidates to come forward. So we'll reconvene at 8:25. Okay. Great. We're getting our show and tell materials here. You bet. Absolutely. There we go. Good. Door's still open.
We can't close it all
day. We can't close it all day. All right. Okay.
The camera, maybe it's not such a good idea.
Good point. Both those are good points. All right. I lied about closing the door. Cooler heads have prevailed. So, are we ready to start? Please tell me you haven't started yet.
Can I make a suggestion before we start? Oh, it is.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, this is how I would like this to run. Candidates, just... There we go. All right. Much better. Candidates have 5 minutes to speak. We'll have moments in between. The order of speaking is going to be by district, starting with District 1 and alphabetically within the district. And Carol will be calling you to the action.
Do we want to get the laptop off?
People who are going to be using the laptop. Yes. Right, yeah. The laptop will be in use in a couple of places. All right. So now I'm going to turn this segment over to Carol. And we're off.
Good evening. I'm Carol Maurer, and as I am leaving LOCAC now, after 8 years, I decided I would head up the election this year, and it's been a lot of work, but also very pleasurable. I'm getting to meet a lot more people, even than I had met all along. I'd first like to tell you about the LOCAC election. The Advisory Council has 4 openings. Every 2 years, we have an election for one person in each residential district in Los Osos. And this year, two of our candidates are incumbents, and they are running again. That's Alon and Fred, that are already on the council, but they're running from their districts. And 2 of the council members from the other 2 districts are not running again, and that's Keith Swanson and I. So those will be brand new. Granted, we have we'll have at least one candidate new from those districts, if not more than one. So we're going to start with going alphabetical order within our residential district. We're privileged to have 9 candidates this year, 4 from District 1, 2 from District 2, 2 from District 3, and 1 from District 4. District 1 is the area of basically Baywood Park. And there's more information about our districts on our website, and I'll give you that, and then I'll jump back again. LOCAC, it's www.locac.us, locac.us. And the candidate statements are on the web, as well as the district explanation. There is going to be an election on May 15th at the little schoolhouse right here next to the South Bay Community Center. The election will be from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on May 15th. If you can't or choose not to vote in person that day, you can pick up an absentee ballot. We've been distributing them since last weekend, and we will continue to do so until till just before the election. You can get an absentee ballot at Vaughn's and Ralph's on Saturday and Sundays from 1 to 5. There'll be a table at each store, and on Mondays at the farmer's market. So the last one will be May the 10th, is Monday for the last farmer's market. There's a sign here, I don't know if that's been picked up. Yes, it's on right now, that describes that. If you do choose to get an absentee ballot, then you must mail it in, and so that it's received at the post office box by May 15th on election day. It'll be counted that night. Or if you forget to mail it, you can bring it by in the envelope, in the absentee envelope. You can bring it by the little schoolhouse on May 15th during the polling hours. With that, I think that's all I have to say about the election. The candidate statements are available on the back table if you're here. As I said, they're available on the web if you're watching this at home. There's also a summary of people's candidate statements and a very nice article in today's Bay News. So pick up a Bay News, and there's a nice article about our election. We're going to start with District 1, and the first person in District 1 is Carolyn Atkinson, and I see she's here. So welcome, and good luck.
I'm Carolyn Atkinson.
Oh, thanks. I'm a homeowner in District 1, and it would be a privilege for me to serve my neighbors in this on this committee. I think the community should always...
Carolyn, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the mic isn't on, and so we'll restart the timer when it's ready. I'm sorry.
He'll come help you.
He's coming to help.
Oh.
Okay. Speak right into it.
Okay, I'll start over. I'm Carolyn Atkinson, and I'm a homeowner in District 1, and I would be privileged to serve on this committee. I think the community should always ask if a project is necessary, can the community afford it, and are we able to maintain what we already have, and how does it benefit all of us? I think I would be an asset to the community or the committee because I ask questions and I'm happy to research the answers. I have a BA in.
Here's yours right here. Oh, go ahead. There you go. And then you can just click through them as you wish. Okay. It's not going to be on yet. Okay. All right. Time to start. My name's Alon Perlman. I actually hadn't timed what I planned to say, so I'll just get right into it and see how far we get. If I end abruptly, so be it. As Carol said, Jack Beardwood has put an article in the Bay News, and I will not go over that material. I have been 4 years your representative. I will add that I've been to almost every committee meeting for LOCAC. My words spoken on your behalf have made their way into LOCAC bylaws, resolution, and into the guiding documents of the county. As a team, we worked on county documents, mobile home ordinances, and water shortage severity 3 declaration. I know the Baywood Sands. I have gotten to know the Baywood Sands, the bay, the birds, the tides, the sweet waters, the streets, the trees, the drainage patterns, and many of the people of Los Osos. I hope to be able to meet many more of you. I'll get a little bit into my philosophy. By the way, I did get a pothole fixed even before I joined LOCAC. I showed up to a couple of LOCAC meetings. One thing about the way I approach LOCAC is I internalized the idea of representing the community as a whole. And since you're all individuals, that's pretty much an impossible task. I try to create a wall of separation personally to keep my other politics out of LOCAC to the greatest extent possible. So I have been quite active, and a lot of that activity does involve preparing for the LOCAC meetings. In other words, land use, there's a certain amount of homework that needs to be done. I've enjoyed it quite a bit. I believe that LOCAC, as any institution, is strongest when it understands its purview and when it stands at the edge of its purview looking out. Longer term, I think keeping a LOCAC tradition is important. We operate in the spirit of the Brown Act, and every time we interact as a group. And once every 2 years, we have to invoke the spirit of the Fair Elections Code. That spirit lives in each of our individual disciplines, but it also lives in our bylaws, our policies, and procedure. So I'd like to continue to work on those and bring about an even better LOCAC. And I would like to mention, I believe it was Justice Brenner said, democracy does not work without the people. So we need to hear from you and come to our meetings. The remaining time, I'd like to show you a few slides of the activities. Or not. Ooh, paint shop. Well, that wasn't supposed to happen. That happens to be some Baywood erosion. How much time do I have left? It's supposed to be in the slideshow.
Move
it to the last slide and I'll end.
Well, that may very well be the end of my talk.
Okay, let me get in there. Got it?
Well, that's this beautiful area we live in. So I think we should just realize that's what we're here for, and I'll leave it at that. Good luck to all candidates.
Thank you, Alon. Our next candidate is Chuck Sneed, who isn't able to be here tonight, but he does have a representative here tonight who will speak on his behalf. And that's Richard Margetson, who has agreed to do that. And he's representing Chuck Sneed for District 1.
Richard Margetson, first of all, Chuck apologizes for not being here tonight. He had a vacation, two-week vacation planned many months before he ever considered running for LOCAC, and so he can't be here tonight. He asked me to read this statement. I took it out of first person so it would kind of make sense, so bear with me. Chuck checked home subdivisions if and when our building moratorium is lifted. He understands, though, that in order for there to be any future build-out, we must first address our seawater intrusion issues, develop a comprehensive water conservation program, and complete a sewer project. He believes all of these issues will dominate the planning process in Los Osos for the next decade, and that LOCAC can and should be a part of the decision-making process, even if only as an advisory council. Chuck's work background will bring a new perspective to LOCAC, and if elected, he will do his very best to serve the community to the best of his ability. Thank you from Chuck Sneed.
Thank you, Richard, and I thank you for Chuck Sneed. Now we move into District 2. We have two candidates for District 2. Is Jan here? I can't see her, there she is, behind the head. Okay, our first candidate to speak is Jan Harper, who is running for District 2.
Hello. Before I start, I just want to mention that there's two supervisor events. AGB Video videotaped last night's EcoSlow. It's going to be available and shown. You can see it at SlowSpan, so if you want to watch it, it's already there as far as I understand. There is going to be a session 5-7, so May 7th, 7 p.m. at the Trinity Methodist Church. That'll be just for the two District 2 candidates. So that's my first thing I wanted to say. Hello and good evening, Board, Council, and community. Buenas noches, Consel, y señores y señoras. Me llamo Jan Harper, y estoy corriendo por la silla abierta en Distrito Número 2. Distrito 2 es el área entre Los Osos Valley Road, al norte hasta Paso Robles, y en el sur del South Bay Boulevard hasta Farrell en el oeste. Quiero ser parte de construir nuestra comunidad para que sea una comunidad fuerte, vibrante y una que respecta a todos, por favor. Así podemos trabajar juntos para solucionar situaciones y tareas difíciles. Esto toma una persona tolerante y sincera para participar. En este proceso voy a hacer lo más que pueda para alcanzar todos los ciudadanos en Los Osos para asistencia y entrada. I'm Jan Harper, and I'm running for the open seat in District 2. District 2 is the area between Los Osos Valley Road and Paso Robles to the south and from South Bay Boulevard to Farrell in the west. Many of you may recognize me from attending meetings and around town. I believe this is a council that has an important, if not powerful, role to play in building Los Osos into a strong, vibrant, and respectful community. It takes tolerant and candid people to facilitate this process, and that is why I am running for the District 2 seat. As we face our challenges, I will reach out to the Los Osos community for their assistance and input. My plans are to walk and canvass much of District 2 prior to the May 15th vote. I also have friends within the district who want to canvass their neighbors and neighborhood. I have the organizational and interpersonal skills to encourage this participation. Together, we can build on our strengths and create consensus so that we can move into the future. I am asking for your district to vote, to build our community together. Thank you. To contact me, I can be contacted by email, jtlocac@yahoo.com. If you're in the district, want to talk to me, have a question. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. Jan, I gave you the parameters for District 2. I'm going to repeat that again. So it's everyone who lives in Los Osos, who lives south of Los Osos Valley Road and north of Paso Robles Street, and everyone who is east of Broderson and west of South Bay Boulevard. So that's I wanted to let
LCSD Wastewater Committee, and I served 2 years on the City of San Luis Obispo's Contractor Grievance Committee, and I have been serving for 2 years on the LOCAC Land Use Committee. I won with the San Luis Obispo Sustainability Group Granny Housing Competition with the only passive solar entry for the county's giveaway Granny Housing Plans. Now, how will I vote? Okay, this is probably what you really want to know, is how I'm going to vote when I go and vote. I'm going to vote to voice and express our local rights to self-govern and limit taxation. Now, this is a really interesting point for us right now, because basically we have all these chips as homeowners. We have the gray water chip, we have the roof runoff chip, we have the lid development chip. We have these chips as homeowners, and we're going to at times be at odds with the county over what those chips are worth, because they represent our taxation limitations. Because when we start incorporating sustainability into our communities and we say, oh wait, those are our, we already have those rights, you can't not give us some credit for them, is that the county and ourselves will have to sit down and come to an agreement over how sustainability is going to make the taxation come down for us as homeowners, and assessments come down for us as homeowners. So that's the kind of like tie-in I see, and I see my role on the board is I basically break it down. I basically break it down into three things. Is that you all have property rights. The people in my district have property rights. They're homeowners. They have property rights. I'm going to vote as a homeowner. I'm going to vote for my property rights. If I feel like, you know, they have no right to take that away from, you know, take my use of that water away from me or something like that, I'm going to say those are my property rights. And if the issue comes up on the board where we're not giving homeowners any credit at all for a whole bunch of development in terms of going green, and the developers basically use up all the water that we've generated from going green, then that's not fair. There has to be a balance. And my point on this board would be to balance the interests of developers and homeowners in terms of us going green forward. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Our next district is District 3, which and the area covered by District 3 is quite large geographically, very large, actually, geographically, although the population is sort of the same as the other districts. District 3 covers all of the areas south of Los Osos Valley Road, west to Broderson, and all of the area east of South Bay Boulevard, so all including all of the agricultural area. So we have two candidates for District 3. The first of them is Fred Delegata, who is on LOCAC at this point and running again. Thank you, Fred.
Thank you, Carol. I am Fred Delegata, District 3 candidate for the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. I would like to thank the citizens who attend LOCAC meetings for their participation and those who view us on Channel 20 for staying informed. I would like to thank Pat Renshaw for recording LOCAC meetings and Charter Communication for airing the LOCAC meetings on Channel 20. I would also like to give thanks to the following people. Joey Ricano for stepping up to run for LOCAC. I wish more people would get interested and involved in LOCAC. Carol Maurer for 8 years of service, four of them as LOCAC chairperson. She will be missed dearly, for she knows LOCAC better than anyone else, pays attention to detail, and did a first-rate job. Thank you to Bill Garfinkel for managing our website, which is very up-to-date. The Los Osos CSD for giving their reports at LOCAC meetings, the county for financing our budget and offering staff time to meet with us to answer our questions. This would include winter and sat waiting by the phone. The phone finally rang. It was Richard Lambert from Los Osos. He needed a couple horses trimmed, and I made my first appearance on Seahorse Lane. I would shoe a lot of horses on that road over the next 15 years. I've lived in District 3 for 15 years and Los Osos for 25. District 3 stretches down Los Osos Valley Road into the agricultural area. I first moved into the agricultural area in 1984 and lived on a second farm a few years later. I currently live in the Palisades area of District 3. As the current vice chair, I am required to sit on the executive committee and help set agendas. The standing committees I have chaired are land use, parks and recreation, trees, and currently transportation and circulation, where I have held meetings on RTA bus route changes, Santa Isabel traffic calming, and street barrier removal. With the public's assistance, I notify the Slo County Public Works Department about issues such as ice plant growing over public sidewalks, street lamps that don't light up crosswalks at intersections, potholes at farmers market, and drainage projects that don't drain so well. I attend the yearly advisory council training and many committee meetings. I attend most land use committee meetings and encourage my fellow council members to do the same. Land use is the main focus of LOCAC, and by attending the meetings, I can learn about each project before it appears on the agenda in front of the full council. I advocated for no new straws in the basin until seawater intrusion was stopped and reversed, for new trails and parks, for trees to be planted to replace the many we have lost, and for an adult softball field that seniors can use and share with the rest of the community. I want to protect our local agricultural land and make sure we always grow produce close to home. I support a bus line directly up and down Los Osos Valley Road to San Luis Obispo, servicing the box stores, Trader Joe's, Kennedy Fitness, and the Madonna Road stores. I support Sarah Christie's plan to keep our treated wastewater in the basin and not evaporate it outside of the basin. I support alternative technologies to be considered in the Los Osos Wastewater Project, as Supervisor Gibson once promised but never followed through with. I think that while we have our treated wastewater above ground, we should use it, therefore diminishing the amount of pumping from our basin. We should quit the practice of blending lower we should quit the practice of blending lower aquifer water with upper aquifer water. In essence, the practice of blending is polluting the pristine water from our lower aquifer by mixing it with our nitrate-polluted upper aquifer water. While I call our lower aquifer water pristine, I understand that seawater is intruding further each year. We should have hooked up landscape irrigation and toilets to the upper aquifer and drinking faucets to the lower aquifer.
Fred, your time is up.
After all, it really is about the water. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. Our second District 3 candidate is Joey Ricano, and I don't see him here. So if you want to read his candidate statement, either pick it up, read it here from the handout that we have in the back, or go to the web or see his comments in the Bay News. Our last district is District 4, and that covers every residents that's west of Broderson, as though Broderson went all the way through to the bay. It also covers the area, the Morrill Shores Mobile Home Park. No, I'm sorry, that's District 3. I should have said District 3 included that. So it's everything west of Broderson. And our candidate for District 4 is Alyssa Feldman, and she is here tonight. Thank you, Alyssa.
Hello, thank you. All right, I'm going to go ahead and read my statement. In 2005, my husband and I moved to Los Osos, leaving the big city to live in a place surrounded by beauty and peacefulness. I grew up in Los Angeles. I have a bachelor's degree in physical anthropology from UCSB and a master's degree in elementary education. My greatest joys in life are having the opportunity to raise my 14-month-old son and spending time with my family. As a child, I came up here with my dad and my mom on almost every vacation, so I'm pretty familiar with the area from a little kid until now. I live in the Cuesta by the Sea area in District 4. I spend my days strolling around Los Osos, actually strolling with the stroller, enjoying the outdoors and our community. I have come to know Los Osos well and love it, but I feel there is room for improvement. I personally want to become more involved in shaping our future. I'm concerned about our natural spaces, infrastructure, and improving our quality of life, both for my family and as well as the community. As a homeowner, I have a vested interest in the long-term goals of Los Osos. Issues that are important to me include the environment, wildlife, and maintaining our spectacular surroundings.
And it's really refreshing to have someone come and say, you know, I love this place and I want to be involved. And I encourage everyone who's out there in our audience tonight and watching us at home to think about doing that as well. We have wonderful committees. Fred mentioned them, pretty much mentioned all of them, except for outreach. And we have these great committees that meet in meet every month, and we'd really like people, even if they're not on LOCAC, to become involved in our committees. So it's that kind of energy that Alyssa just talked about, that caring and beauty she cherishes that causes us to get involved in the first place. So thank you so much. These are our candidates, and we encourage you to please vote on May 15th in person, or pick up an absentee ballot at the places I mentioned before. Again, the sign is in front of me, so I'm hoping that you'll pay attention to it. Read the article. There are lots of good things here going on, and I hope you participate. Thank you.
Lindy.
I just wanted to, Carol didn't mention, but we are tabling and have the absentee ballots in front of Vaughn's and hopefully Ralph's if we have enough people to cover our tables from 1:30 to, no, 1 to 5.
Yeah, I'll repeat that again. I did say it earlier, Lindy.
Okay, I just wanted to.
But it's Vaughn's and Ralph's from 1 to 5 on Saturdays and Sundays. So it's this Saturday and Sunday and the following Saturday and Sunday, and Farmers Market next Monday and the following Monday for the whole Farmers Market. And you can pick up an absentee ballot there. Thank you.
Okay, so before I adjourn the meeting,
comment if I
can? We have a comment from my cohort over here.
Thank you. I'd like to again thank LOCAC for co-sponsoring this meeting with us. I thought it was a very, very good informative session, and we will try to get it on Channel 20 more than the normal rotation, so we'll work on that. I also would like to just for the sake of the public and the people that are here, our next meeting is a week from today, May 6th. We meet on the first Thursdays of the month. So I would like to encourage people to attend our meetings. We're trying to do the best we can to encourage community participation like we did today, having the candidates taped and put on television. So we meet the first Thursdays of the month. I know you meet the fourth Thursdays of the month, so I think we just need to encourage participation in both those before both of our groups. And again, I'd like to thank everybody, including the audience and the people who gave the presentations. Yeah, Lindy.
And Marshall has one more announcement.
Chipping Day, I was going to talk about it at my meeting on the 6th, but since Lindy brings the subject up now, May 22nd is our annual Chipping Day. I have to get my glasses on now. It will be at Fairchild Way at San Ynez Avenue from 9 to 3. It'll be closed from 12 to 12:30 for lunchtime. But again, that's Fairchild Way at San Ynez Avenue from 9 to 3 on Saturday, May 22nd, the annual Chipping Day.
Is it my turn now?
Yes.
Thank you. Before we adjourn, Fred beat me to it. I want to thank Carol for everything that she's done for LOCAC in the last 8 years, and most recently chairing the election committee. I get to see how much work this has been, and Carol and Keith and Paul, the election committee, they have a 3-page small type project plan for the election. I'm sorry. And Dick, and I am very, I apologize, Dick. And so far they've been marching through it, and it's been a very organized series of events. So, once again, I would like to add my voice to urging everyone out there in TV land as well as in the room to get involved with both of us, the CSD and LOCAC. We not only allow citizen members of our committees, we are strongly encouraging of folks getting involved with our committees. Even if you don't want to be part of the formal LOCAC, the committees is actually where the bulk of the work gets done. And when we have our monthly meetings, that's where we have final discussions and decide what recommendations we're going to be making. The real work gets done in the committees, and that's the fun part. So thank you all very much. And I want to thank our cohorts on the CSD once again for